TV satellite trucks to restrict further images. You have in the occupied West Bank Rula Hassanein, who is a Palestinian journalist. It's unclear if she was in, taken from her home in Ramallah or was at Bethlehem at like 2 in the morning, has a 9-month-old baby, is breastfeeding. This just happened. The attack on journalists, and what do you think is the message Israel is sending?
The message is that they are reoccupying all of the West Bank and all of Gaza, subjecting all Palestinian people without exception to terrible oppression. And as you know, Amy, since the beginning of this war, Israel did not allow any foreign journalist to enter Gaza, except for one from CNN who was allowed there only for 3 hours. They didn't allow any foreign journalist in, and then they started executing the local journalists. Up to now, 146 Palestinian journalists in Gaza were killed by Israeli snipers or Israeli bombardment, including two from Al Jazeera network. And now they've arrested the third one, Al Ghul, before and practically tortured him before releasing him. And you remember the story of the family of Dahdouh, who lost his wife, his children, and because he was reporting for Al Jazeera. And in my opinion, the attacks on journalists are also taking place in the West Bank. More than 30 journalists were arrested so far, and it goes on. And in the West Bank, by the way, Israel has arrested more than 7,500 new people. The total number of people in Israeli jails in the West Bank has risen from 5,300 to almost 9,000. And one thing that the world doesn't talk about is the terrible torture that the people in Israeli prisons are subjected to. They are fighting them, torturing them with hunger. They brought down the rations for their food rations by 70%. They beat them regularly. Most recently, they attacked even one of the political prisoners, Marwan Barghouti, and many of his colleagues as well, beating them badly. And it goes on. We have lost already 13 people in Israeli jails because of torture and because of beating and because of starvation. The situation in Israeli prisons is horrifying. And in Gaza, we don't know exactly the number of people who were imprisoned or kidnapped. We're talking about thousands of people, maybe 3,000, maybe 4,000. But the people who were released told us horrible stories about how they were tortured in an Israeli concentration camp in the Negev with electrical shocks, with drowning them in the water, with terrible beating. The director of Shifa Hospital is still imprisoned. They broke both of his hands, as was reported, and they tried to force him to admit things that he never did. That is the reality and the situation on the ground. It's horrifying.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, I want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian physician, activist, politician, serves as general secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, speaking to us from his office in the occupied West Bank in Ramallah. Next up, we talk about Haiti. As violence continues, we speak with the former U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti, Ambassador Dan Foote, who resigned in 2021, citing the Biden administration's what he called inhumane treatment of Haitian asylum seekers and U.S. meddling in Haitian politics. Back in 20 seconds.
في نص الليل عملية ليت في البيت في الأقصى عمعتها لو بكفر أصلي تدين جيب جيش فوت على الحرب اتغلب مقنابل الصوت بالدخبة تقلب أنا شاب متكتك أصلي مرتب صوت صوت ضوضاء زي حفلة في نص الليل عملية ليت في البيت في الأقصى عمعتها لو بكفر أصلي تدين جيب جيش فوت على الحرب اتغلب مقنابل الصوت بالدخبة تقلب أنا شاب متكتك أصلي مرتب ببلاط ببلاط عبي السما طلاق تنسيق تدخل على كفر عقاب بدك جيش تفوت على مخيم نحكيش أسماء إذا حدا طلاق
متكتك which means good etiquette by Shab Jadid and Al Nather. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Haiti, at least 12 people have been killed as armed groups attack Pétionville, an upscale area in the capital Port-au-Prince, Monday. Amid the worsening violence and turmoil, Haiti's power company announced 4 substations have been destroyed, leaving swaths of the capital without electricity. Last week, unelected Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry announced he'll resign after a coalition of armed groups opposing the de facto leader declared an uprising. Haitian stakeholders and leaders of CARICOM, the Caribbean community, are still in negotiations to establish a transitional presidential council in Haiti. This comes as a U.S. government chartered flight carrying over 30 U.S. citizens, Haitian Americans, landed Sunday in Miami. Meanwhile, a boat carrying 25 migrants from Haiti was intercepted by Florida officials and turned over to the Coast Guard for deportation. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has deployed soldiers from National Guard to block Haitians from reaching Florida. The Biden administration is also reportedly considering housing any influx of Haitians to Guantanamo Bay. For more, we're joined by Ambassador Dan Foote. He is the former U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti, resigned from his post in September 2021, citing the Biden administration's inhumane treatment of Haitian asylum seekers and U.S. meddling in Haitian politics. Joining us now from Buffalo, New York. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Ambassador Foote. Can you talk about what's happening right now in Haiti?
Yeah, it's complete anarchy and chaos. Haiti's been broken since the assassination of the president 32 months ago. But by anointing Ariel Henry, the United States and the international community put a hated party back in power in Haiti, the party that the Haitians consider responsible for where they are right now. And as a result, 32 months has gone by. Haiti has eroded by a magnitude of 5 or 10 times in that period. And it's just chaos on the street. And currently, we're holding Haiti hostage through this CARICOM political process. We wasted going on 3 weeks now since this current crisis started. I think that's a signal that the Haitian people probably don't want the CARICOM solution.
I want to turn to a clip of former U.S. Ambassador to Haiti, Pamela White, speaking to Fox News over the weekend.
I talked to Guy Philippe yesterday, and I know that he's sort of put as being one of the bad boys, but in my opinion, he's someone that can help with the situation, and I believe we should be dealing with him. We dealt with the Duvaliers for 20-plus years. We can certainly deal with Guy Philippe. He's charismatic, he's bright, he's articulate, and he has many, many people that are following him, and I think he can be part of the solution. I think that even Barbecue, Jimmy C, can be part of the solution. I don't think that 1,000 Kenyan troops for the tune of $237 million are going to turn the situation around in Haiti. And my last really important point is this new 7-person council, transition council. I don't know transition to what, because we're in a total failed state in Haiti. But in any case, if one of the people that are appointed on that 7-person council are the elite, the names that we have heard, the political elite, the private sector elite, even one, the people that have mansions in the hills of Port-au-Prince, Pétionville and above, the people who have mansions in Florida and send their kids to Ivy League schools, those people, if there's even one, it's going to fail.
So that's former U.S. Ambassador to Haiti, Pamela White, from 2012 to 2015, speaking to Fox News. This is quite amazing that she's talking about Guy Philippe. Guy Philippe, who was one of the leaders of the coup that overthrew the democratically elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide, supported by the George W. Bush, supported by the Bush administration. And then you had the fact that he served years in jail, in a U.S. jail for drug trafficking, just released in November. It reminds us of Joe, of Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was just convicted of drug trafficking, the former U.S.-supported president of Honduras. And she is saying he should be considered, he did come out of prison and say he wants to be the president of Haiti. Is this possible that the U.S. is pushing for him to be a part of the solution?
There certainly is some ironic timing going on. I don't think the U.S. is that foolish, but they've made a lot of poor judgment errors in Haiti in the past 3 years, so anything is possible. They just released Guy Philippe a matter of months ago after he completed a seven-year stint in federal prison for money laundering. They couldn't get him on drug trafficking, or they would have, or he would have done 30 years, and they sent him back there. Now, Guy Philippe has a little bit of a constituency in Haiti. He's not an unknown, but the Haitians are not looking to be governed by criminals, and the Haitian people have to make these decisions. This is a great example of Americans, foreigners, non-black Haitians. Everybody has an answer for Haiti. Unfortunately, historically, none of those answers have worked. And throwing gangbangers into the middle of this is not going to work. There's a voice to a certain extent that the gangs have gained in the past 30 months. And they're going to have to cooperate in a Haitian dialogue, and I think they will, but the Haitian people have no room for criminals in their leadership in the future. They've had criminal leaders with impunity because of their backing from the international community for the past many years, generations.
Ambassador Foote, what about people who are fleeing Haiti? Explain why you quit in 2021.
Two reasons. The main reason was the anointment and support of Ariel Henry. It was clear to me that was not going to work. And at the time the U.S. was propping him up, there was a parallel discussion going on in Haiti, civil society and opposition political parties looking to come together with a consensus political agreement. And that was, in my opinion, and still is, the way forward for Haiti. Then you had the terrible situation in Del Rio, Texas, where you had CBP guys whipping Haitian refugees up there. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back for my resignation.
You talked about the inhumane treatment the Biden administration in returning, deporting Haitians into a very dangerous situation.
I did. Let's look at this. We, for years, have told all Americans, don't travel to Haiti. It's too dangerous. If the balloon goes up, we might not be able to help you. And we're seeing right now that that's going on. You have over 1,000 Americans trying to get out of Haiti right now, and the U.S. government is not assisting them at all. Everyone in Haiti is going to look to leave that island, as you and I would right now if we were there. It's not livable. And famine and violence and a complete breakdown of society is something that any cogent human being would try to flee. The idea that we can just use Guantanamo as a staging area is kind of crazy. We've done it before. Haiti is a failed state. It can't support the people that live there right now. We have taken all of our people and gotten them out. What kind of humanity exists when we're then picking up desperate Haitians and forcing them back into this catastrophe?
The idea of Haiti, the history of the U.S. Being repeated in Haiti. The U.S. put Haitians with HIV at Guantanamo until the outcry was so great and lawsuits they were dealing with was too much. And that ended. But the idea of putting them back into this prison camp, If you can talk about what it means that this is an election year for President Biden and Haitians fleeing the violence of Haiti, going to Florida is also a repeat of history. U.S. involvement leading to Haitian refugees. They land in Florida and Democrats are afraid of Florida flipping. What do you think should happen? You have the senator of Massachusetts, the Congress member from Massachusetts as well, Ayanna Pressley, demanding that Haitians not be deported as late as last week. And yet we see returns, for example, forcing the return of Haitian migrants at sea.
So, first of all, let me touch on this. Haitians right now are kind of beside themselves. They're like, the U.S. kind of used to be our friend and our partner. Why are they doing this to us? And the fact that we're trying to impose another flawed government on the Haitian people and ask them all to stay there and not going anywhere is unfathomable to these poor people. They've asked me, what's next? Are you going to build a cage around Haiti? So let's turn to immigration. The Biden administration in 21, after the assassination, treated Haiti not as hemispheric and global leaders, but as somebody just trying to sweep something under the rug for domestic politics and hoping that it wouldn't blow up. And now their worst nightmare has occurred here a few months before the elections. And as Haitians and I have been predicted the whole time, it has now completely come unspooled. And the Biden administration is flailing. The idea that you can scoop up every Haitian that's fleeing Haiti on these unseaworthy boats is a dangerous concept. I'm concerned for our own Coast Guard folks boarding and seizing and taking migrants into custody is a very dangerous thing, particularly in the seas between Haiti and Florida, which are quite rough. And you're taking a lot of risk on our own security officials in doing this. But at the end of the day, what are we accomplishing in doing this other than telling Haitians not to come here? Our economy was on the verge of a terrible recession a year ago. That never occurred, and nobody's ever asked why. If you look and ask economists, it's because the huge migrant influx has prevented that, because we need that labor. And the fact that we can just keep out desperate people from Haiti is a concept, but not a reality. You can close the border, as the Biden administration has talked about doing. But I live right across from the border with Canada, and there's no way that we can stop people from coming across our enormous borders if we try.
Ambassador Danforth, I want to thank you for being with us. Former U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti resigned his post in 2021 over what he called the Biden administration's inhumane treatment of Haitian asylum seekers. Next up, as Donald Trump once again escalates attacks on migrants, talking about them as animals, we'll see a film that, to say the least, changes the narrative. It's called Unseen, profiling a blind, undocumented social work student named Pedro. Back in 20 seconds.
One of these days, I'll sit you down and I'll tell you all about this dream of mine. But at the moment, I'm not sure how to put it in words. I stumble crash in the dark of my mind. They chase me away.
Round and Around, a new song by Julie Yoon Kim, featured in Unseen, a new film that we'll talk about next. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. On the campaign trail, Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump's escalating his attacks on migrants.
Years, if you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion, but I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity, and these humanity, these are bad. These are animals, okay?
These are not people. These are animals. Trump's also touted fake news about crime rates by undocumented immigrants, even though studies show U.S.-born residents are much more likely to commit crimes than undocumented immigrants, including violent crimes. Meanwhile, President Biden said he regrets using the word illegal during a State of the Union address to describe a Venezuelan immigrant accused of killing a Georgia nursing student, Laken Riley. Biden will campaign in the battleground border states of Arizona and Nevada today. Well, a new film hopes to reframe the narrative entirely. It premiered Monday night on the PBS documentary series POV called Unseen. Profiles a blind, undocumented social work student named Pedro. The film's accessible for blind and low vision audiences. This is the trailer.
Keep going, Tyler.
The bus is coming.
Oh, cool. Yes.
Nice.
A service animal.
You got a service to your dog?
He's a guide dog.
Oh, okay. So you're blind now?
Uh-huh.
Well, you want me to describe myself to you?
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so cute. Got a nice smile.
I believe it.
After you have a disability, you're going to have some type of impediment. But the intersectionality between being undocumented and having a disability, it plays a lot of stress and anxiety into you. I decided to study social work. I wanted to help people. I wanted to give an opportunity for those that they didn't have an opportunity. On our path, there are going to be some obstacles. So I want you to go swipe left and right, cover from shoulder to shoulder, just to see if you can find out obstacles.
I hate that narrative of like the good immigrant, especially when it's like, hey, he's blind, he's undocumented, he's going to college. Oh, he must be a saint. I'm here. I was able to make it this far, but how many people have to sacrifice for me to get a chance?
The trailer for Unseen. We're joined now in Los Angeles by its director, Seth Hernandez. Welcome to Democracy Now! Congratulations on this amazing film. If you can talk about your journey making it with your friend Pedro, and I mean, just the title Unseen, of course, invoking undocumented and immigrants, as well as Pedro's sight challenges, and even the framing, the way you make it out of focus for us all to try to see what Pedro sees.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I've been a big fan of the show and truly grateful for the journalism that you all do at Democracy Now! Unseen really started with me meeting Pedro years ago at a program for undocumented young adults. And I feel like with the film, to your point about the title, while the film kind of uplifts the experiences of undocumented and disability through Pedro, I think at the end of the day, the film is also about vulnerability. Because often the discourse about immigration, as you just played the clips, you know, with Donald Trump, it's often kind of coming from this place of the political, the election. And I think for me as an undocumented immigrant myself also, I'm really interested in how can we amplify and uplift the internal and inherent humanity of undocumented folks. And I think at the end of the day, when people watch the film, they're able to connect with the vulnerability that Pedro portrays and that inherent humanity that we uplift from the undocumented and disabled perspective is really what's at the heart of this project.
You begin with Pedro and his dog. as a dog lover, but how touching it is, this team that makes their way, navigates life. And, you know, what Pedro is doing as a social work student, working with those who are challenged, particularly blind, also dealing with one of the worst massacres in U.S. history in Las Vegas, particularly focusing on Latino victims.
I think so much of the film really uplifts the intersectionalities, because when we think about immigration, I feel like the discourse in this country only just focus on immigrants as immigrants. And through Pedro, we are really uplifting how the different intersectionalities of our experience, in Pedro's case, being an undocumented immigrant who also has disability, and also mental health, and how so much of the conversations of fear-mongering, to be honest, even that our communities experience impacts the way we think about our future and uncertainty. And I think with the film, we really are uplifting the experience of interdependence and how we as a community can continue to lean on each other, which Pedro and his community, through Tyler, his guide dog, his family, his mentors, his teachers, are really showcasing, because it's so difficult to just rely on the state for so many of us, and really claiming ownership over our lives in this way.
Talk about the challenges. I want to go to another clip from Unseen. When you, Set, you're the director, you reunite with Pedro.
Pedro, it's been a few years since we've last spoken. How have you been?
My grandma passed in 2018. And that created the trauma to me. She was already feeling sick 2 weeks prior of her passing. Instead of slowing down, prioritize my family over anything else, I decided to go to school on a Sunday to study, to prepare for a final. And I wasn't there. And a semester later, I got my master's. That made me wonder what I was doing with my life. Is it because I really wanted to? Was it because it was being imposed to me? Or simply, I was just trying to survive? Many times I thought about just going to sleep and never wake up again. I was aware that if I ever did something like that, I was going to destroy my mom and my dad. So I didn't have the heart to do something like that.
Talk about how this is also a film about healing, Set. And in some ways, it's about you as well. Part of the 7-year journey you go on making this film, you co-founded out of necessity the Undocumented Filmmakers Collective, which promotes equity for undocumented immigrants in the film industry.
Yes, you know, I want to lift up a quote from Ursula Le Guin. She says, "Hard times are coming. When we'll be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now. We'll need writers who can remember freedom, poets, visionaries, realists of a larger reality." I feel like in the discourse about immigration, so often it's the politicians whose voices and perspectives are uplifted. And with Unseen, what I'm really proud of is our filmmaking team is reflective of Pedro's life. Our film was led by a team of filmmakers who happen to be undocumented immigrants ourselves. Blind and disabled artists have also been an integral part of our filmmaking practice. And I feel like, how can we reclaim the narrative for ourselves instead of further uplifting the perspectives that politicians have about our community? How can we really lean on each other and amplify the voices and the ways that we understand our lives and the world? And I feel like because of the way that the film industry works, undocumented people, systems impacted people, people with disabilities are excluded from receiving resources to be able to make films. Because even for me to be able to make the film, I was excluded from so many grant-making opportunities because of citizenship and residency requirements that so many of these opportunities require. So
Seth,
we're really
Hernandez,
grateful for all the people that have supported us.
I want to thank you for being with us and congratulate you on Unseen, which just premiered on POV. You can now watch it online. We're going to do part two at democracynow.org. Unseen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for BitCoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.